Hi, and welcome to Webcams TV. I'm your host, Corey Fowler. Jaffe is out today. It's about that time of year where Americans eat some delicious food and kind of get comatose. So some people have headed off early, but David here and I are...
Canadian and French, so we don't go for that.
We don't quite celebrate things that at this time of year. So we're here in the studio, and we're going to bring some really interesting content to you today. So, David, why don't you introduce yourself?
Well, I'm a development lead on the Azure Websites team, and more specifically, I've been working on the project that is codenamed Kudu, which is the support for a number of things in Azure Website, including Git, Mercurial, Dropbox, and a number of other things.
Yeah.
And more recently, we've been working on this thing that we're calling Site Extensions, which is what we're going to talk about today.
Cool. So we're going to focus, the majority of the show is going to be focused on the site extensions part. But if you do want to learn more about Kudu itself, which is the deployment engine for Azure Websites, there's a Hanselman Azure Friday talk that you did with Scott Hanselman.
It's a series of, four or five or six small segments.
Great. Yeah. And I definitely suggest you check that out, because I've been digging into to Kudu for quite some time now, and I just love all the work that you guys are doing on that team.
Thank you.
It's amazing. Yeah. So tell us a little bit more about these site extensions.
Okay, so site extensions are basically a way to add functionality to the admin site. So let me back out a little bit, and I have a couple of slides that I can show that explain some basics. That when you create an Azure website, you are able to run this website under a certain URL that has this shape here, mysite.azurewebsites.net. But along with this site, there's always a second site that comes along, which we call the SCM site. And we call it that because it's got SCM in the name. So it's pretty much the same URL as the site, except with this extra segment, and the protocol is always HTTPS.
Yeah.
So first thing I'll do here is kind of show you, I'll go to the Azure portal and create a new site and show you around this SCM site. So, and then we'll get to how that fits into site extensions and such. So
great.
I'll just start by creating, let's go from gallery, and I'll use the little bakery sample on here. Okay, so let's call it bakery demo something. Okay, not taken, and I'll go with West US.
So this is just the bakery demo that if you've used either Web Platform Installer or Web Matrix in the past, the exact same demo, only this
That's
time
right.
we deploy it straight out to Azure Websites.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So nothing new here. This concept of creating an Azure website from a template has been there since day one. I'm only using it just to get a starter site that actually has something in it. So let's go in here, and first thing, we'll go and run this site just to see it running. Let me go back so we can see the tabs here. And what I want to show here is, so I'll start with duplicating this tab and doing the same transform that I was showing in the slide, how I can go from HTTP to HTTPS here.
Yep.
And I'll add this SCM segment here. And one key thing about this SCM endpoint is that it is authenticated. And the credentials I'm typing here are the same one that I would use when I use Git or FTP.
Yep. So that's your deployment credentials, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
OK, and what I'm reaching here is the root of the Kudu site.
Yep.
So Kudu is itself a site extension. And it is the site extension that happens to be at the root of the SCM site. And here, we'd also use Kudu has a very interesting tool which we call a diagnostic console, which lets you look at files and has a console in there.
Yeah.
And what we can do in here, what I want to show you is the applicationhost.config for this site.
Okay.
So if you're familiar with the IIS, applicationhost.config is the file that defines a lot of the things I have to do with the site. And here, specifically the place where I find it, is a config folder that is one above, and I'm just literally going to type the applicationhost.config in my console here, and I'll look for a specific section that has the site definition. And let me just grab it and paste it into Notepad. We'll see a little bit better. And what I want to draw attention here to, like, first let me delete a few things that are just noise so we can focus on the more relevant parts. Mm-hmm. But this shows us what I was saying earlier, that we don't have one site, but we have two sites. So this first site here is the main site that's running the bakery.
Yep.
And we can see that it's mapped to the site/dubdubroot folder, which is when you deploy stuff via FTP, web deploy, or Git, that's where things end up.
Yep.
But now we have this second site, which has a slightly different name, but you don't need to worry about this till day one mm-hmm. difference. But in terms of where the files are, this one is on the program files x86 site extensions, and then Kudu. So let's go back to our little console window and drill into that place to see the files a bit closer here.
Cool.
Okay. Program file x86, that should do it. Okay. Site extensions. If I look what we have in here, we have actually not one but two site extensions. Monaco is the new online ID, which you've probably seen in the last week or two it was announced. Yep. Very cool stuff. But let's focus on Kudu first. If I look at Kudu here, we have one specific version of Kudu, because for a given site extension, you can actually have multiple side by side. And if I look here, the key file we want to look at is this application host.xdt. I'm just going to type it, and I can just grab the content and throw them in Notepad for slightly better readability. So what this file is basically a transform over application host.config. And that's what's being used to add those applications to this SCM site. And here, if we look what it's doing here, what I see basically in this little block here is what becomes this. So of course, there's some variables, so you don't have to hard code a bunch of stuff that you should not need to hard code. But that's what causes this thing to be here. So now, in terms of Monaco, if we go back to what we have here, Monaco is not defined here. And what is the reason for that? The reason is that Monaco is actually not enabled by default.
Yeah.
The way to enable Monaco is to go to the configuration tab and choose Edit in Visual Studio Online, after which, if I go back to the dashboard, I should have a new link. Here it is.
Yep.
So let's look at the URL for Monaco. It's really exactly the same as we had for Kudu up to here, but then it has /dev and then some other stuff.
Yep.
So where does that come from? Now, going back to my Kudu console, I'll actually go back to where I was in the beginning and again type the same application host.config that I had typed earlier, but let's see how it's different now.
So while David's going and pulling this out, that XDT file, if you're an ASP.NET developer, you should be relatively familiar with this, because that's the transform that takes your webconfig file and then the web.debug.config or the web.release.config and transforms all of that into whatever build type you have.
That's right. So it's an XML transformation engine, which. Yeah. Luckily, in the past, I think only 6 months or so, they've put up on Codeplex as a project anybody can use outside of the context of Visual Studio, which was very convenient for us.
And I think we actually had Syed Hashimi on the show to tell us about that.
I see.
If you want to go back technology. And take a look at what's going on under the covers there, we'll have a link on the show or to that show below in the comments area here.
Cool. So, going back, so this is the new application host.config that I just grabbed. It's very similar to what we had before, but now in addition to this /rootapp, which was Kudu, we have another one where it says the path of this application is /dev, and now it goes to similar location except Monaco.
Yeah.
So, and also the interesting question about why is it that Monaco was not on by default? The reason for that, let me go back to program file. site extensions. At the root of Monaco, there is this file called extension.xml, which defines that by default, Monaco is to be disabled. That's why the site did not have it initially. And the act of going in the portal and turning on that Visual Studio Online editing actually created a new environment variable, Monaco extension version equal beta, which is sort of the trigger that told, okay, now Monaco is enabled.
Okay. So with it saying beta there, and I noticed that you do have versions, that
yes.
means eventually there might be multiple versions and you'll be able to choose between
That's right.
which one you want
That's
to use.
Right. So That's cool. there's various things. I mean, here you if you said disabled, obviously nothing is running, but you can set it to, wait, which one? There's beta, there is enabled, mm-hmm. and there is specific version. So if you set it to beta, what it means is out of all the versions that are installed, there's only one here, grab the latest version, oops, including versions that are, what did I do? Ah, I lost the window, but that's okay. So the version of extensions, they use the SAMVer syntax. Mm-hmm. So SAMVer has a specific syntax to define things that are pre-release.
Yep.
So when you say you want beta, it means give me the latest, including pre-release releases.
Okay.
If you say just enabled, it means it excludes the pre-release.
Okay.
And if you set an exact version, you get exactly that.
Cool.
So there's some flexibility. And what's interesting is that each extension that's installed on the machine states its default, but then that can be overridden via the environment variable.
Okay, great. So I know all the developers out there are really excited to see all this stuff come through, and I know that there's probably two questions on their mind. The first one's going to be, how does this affect my website?
Yes.
And I don't know if we wanted to go into details on that first, but the second one's going to be, can I build my own?
Right. So, I mean, how does it affect your website? It only does in the sense that you've got more stuff while you're running the extension. I mean, you have another application that's actually running in the same like sandbox together with your site. So potentially it can affect it if it does like really bad things.
So like memory allocation
yes.
and stuff like that.
Yes, that's all shared. That's all, yeah. If you
bandwidth.
If your site extension is spinning CPU like crazy and you're running, say, a free site, you are going to run out of CPU the same way that you would if you did that from your site.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
So about site extension, what's interesting is that there are really two main types of site extension. There are those that we call pre-installed, and both Kudu and Monaco are of that type. And pre-installed extensions, they do not live like this. What I'm looking at here are my site files. There is no Monaco and there's no Kudu. Well, we do see a Monaco data. That's only a folder with the data that Monaco has created. But the code for Monaco is on the program files site extension and for Kudu.
Okay.
This type of extension, they come with Azure. You cannot install your own at that location because it's on the program files.
Yeah.
Which brings us to the second concept of private site extensions, which are extensions that you can bring into your site and only that one site has it, does not affect other sites, which is great for people who want to bring their own bits.
Yep.
So I'll show you some of that. So to get private extensions, to use them, you have to go to the root of your site and create a private extensions folder. I'm sorry, site extensions. And in there, you basically drop some site extensions. So what does a site extension look like? So to begin with, I'll start showing a very simple example, which is this file count extension. So this is really as simple as it gets. It doesn't do anything super useful, but it demonstrates what a site extension looks like.
Okay.
Going into this folder, it has two files. One of them is application-host.xdt, which is really exactly the same thing we looked at earlier. Okay. So we can look at it again. Here, it just defines that we want to take over the file count path on the SCM URL. And now let's look at the default.aspx. So this is essentially a completely normal website. And that statement holds true of site extensions in general, that you can take any website that can run on Azure website, whether it's .NET, PHP, Node, Python, anything, it can be a site extension.
Cool.
So what makes it slightly special is that it's a site that is meant typically to administer your site. And how does it do that? It receives an environment variable called home that tells it where the files are. So here, in this particular case, it does something very simple. It gets the home slash site slash wwwroot folder, which is where the core website is, and then it just has basic logic to count the files. So now let's see what it takes to deploy this guy into my site as a private extension. There's actually a very nice feature of this Kudu console, and a few people know that, but you can actually take a folder and drag and drop it over, and boom, you have that.
That's brilliant.
So, and hopefully the files are in there as well. So there is one trick to be aware of with private extensions, and it's something that we'll probably work on making simpler in the future, but for now, you need to go into the app settings for the app and turn on a specific value, which I will do here. So you go to the app setting, and there's something called website, private extensions, which you set to one. So hopefully we'll remove this requirement. Right now it's still very new, so you kind of have to opt into it. But
yep.
Eventually it should be enough to just drop the right files in the right place. And by the way, here, I used Kudu console to drop those files just because it's convenient and I like it. But
yeah.
If you wanted to use FTP, it would work exactly the same way.
Cool.
So now that we have done that, let's see how can we run our extension. Well, all we have to do, and I'll just duplicate this tab to make it easier, and I'll go with, what was the segment? File count, I think, right?
File count, yep.
And let's see what happens here. And there we are. It's telling us we have 94 files,
cool.
Which happens to be the count of files. Like if we were to go to the site, wwwroot, I'm not going to count them, but presumably they're 94.
Cool.
So that's to show kind of a really, really simplistic site extension. But let's show a slightly more interesting one. So going back to our site extensions folder, let's grab this PHP manager extension. And that's a sample that is available on GitHub.
Yep.
And what it does is it gives you a UI that lets you administer the PHP settings of your app. In this particular case, you could say it doesn't make all that much sense because the app, this bakery app, is actually .NET and not PHP.
Yep.
But you know, bear with me. It's kind of just to show the extension. There's another trick about extension, which hopefully we will solve later. But whenever you make a change like that, you need to restart your site. So you could click the restart button here. One trick that I use, simply because it tends to be faster, is to change. Anytime you change any app setting, it does a sort of a minimal targeted restart that is good enough for the site extensions and faster than a full restart.
So basically what it's doing here is, because you've added a new XTT file, it has to go and retransform your application.
That's
host?
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Yes, because the application host config, yes, if you just drop files in there, there's no magic right now that picks it up and says, oh, let's just regenerate. You have to go through the cycle of getting the site kind of re-provisioned or reset up.
Yep.
So let's see. The new extension we added is PHP Manager, which also happens to be the segment, I think, that it takes over. And if I go here.
So that's an interesting question while this loads, is if I already have a private extension enabled,
yes,
say it's called PHP Manager.
Yes.
And for whatever reason, there's a PHP manager that gets added as a public extension.
Yes.
Who wins?
The private one wins.
The private one wins?
Yes.
Okay.
In fact, it's very deliberate because we use that mechanism to allow people to bring their own version of Kudu. Like Kudu, which is all built in Git support and stuff, you can actually build Kudu from GitHub because Kudu is being developed fully open source. You bring your own, you create the right site extension slash Kudu, drop the bits, and you're now running your own Kudu.
Cool.
And here we are. So we have this UI that lets me modify PHP settings. So I'll just change a couple of things just for demonstration. Let's make this one be on, and this one be on. And let's see what that did. Going back to the console, if I go to my wwwroot folder, we see that that created a user.ini file, which has those exact settings. So, I mean, that's a good example of an extension which does something much more useful. And one of the things I want to try to convey today is sort of the range of things you can do with site extension, from Kudu, which supports Git deployment, as well as this crazy console that I'm in, to Monaco, that is basically an online IDE, to this PHP manager. Yep. And I'll be showing a couple other things. So the next topic is something that we don't have as an official thing yet, but I really want to show more of a concept. And it's the idea of having a gallery of extensions. Because what I've been showing here is that I have some extensions that are just happen to be sitting locally on my machine, but how did they get here? You know, did I write them? Did I get them from somewhere? Like it, and it takes all kind of maneuvers to get them into my site. And you know, arguably, it's not the best getting started experience. Like if you're not writing your own extension and you just know of one that is useful, you'd like to be able to bring it in a much faster.
Yeah.
So what I'll show here is a prototype of a gallery for site extension, which cool. is a direction we are hoping to go into. Right now it's not a real product, but
cool.
So what I'll do here, one more time, I'll go back to my console.
So this is one of those scene first here on Channel 9 moments that
essentially,
everyone waits for.
Yes.
Excellent.
We'll see how badly that blows up in my face. So I'll do something that's kind of interesting here in the sense that I'm bringing into my site a private site extension, which itself is the gallery UI, which I will later use to bring in more extensions.
Okay.
So I have this thing called gallery. I do need to do this maneuver once more to get it to be enabled.
I love how meta site extensions are. It's like
yes, this one is very meta because it's the site extension that brings in more site extension. So let me go to gallery here. So what this is going to show is a UI that lists some site extensions. Mm-hmm. And the next question is, what is this UI talking to get the list of extension?
Yeah.
And the answer is, while this is loading, we can bring in a different tab. We're actually running an instance of NuGet Gallery, which we borrowed for this purpose. So this is, it looks like a NuGet Gallery. You kind of change the theming. You know, this is really, again, just a prototype. And we have a bunch of packages on there, but these packages really are site extensions.
Cool.
And if I go to here, so the list of packages that we see in here gets reflected in what we see in my UI inside my gallery site extension.
Cool.
So now let's go and grab one. We have this site replicator, which is a kind of a cool demo. And now my experience, instead of drag and dropping those files, you know, like I did earlier, I'm literally just saying, please install this extension into my site.
That's awesome.
And it's done. I still do need, for now, to mess with this value to get the site to be restarted. That'll be going away. And once that's done, I can go and click Run next to the extension. And directly it takes me to a link that is now running this new site extension that I just installed.
Cool.
So let's talk a little bit about the specific site extension. What is it about? I'm calling it Site Replicator. And the idea is you have an Azure website in one region, and you'd like to replicate it to other regions. Such that you could later put Traffic Manager on it.
Yeah.
And have a single URL, single domain that then moves the traffic to the site that is closest.
So essentially, users. It would be a single deploy out to the closest website to wherever you're developing.
Yes.
And then kind of a geo replication across multiple
exactly.
websites.
Exactly. So let's put it to the test. Okay, let me close a few things here. So what I'll do here is create another site in a completely different region. So I'll just do a plain, completely empty site, for instance, in East Asia. Bakery.
So now we're expanding our bakery to the Asian market.
Exactly. And then let's go to, say, Europe as well to make it more fun and have a two. Let's go West Europe. Okay. So now let's give a chance to those two sites to get created. Okay. And now what I'll do is I'll download the publish profile, which is the same file that typically if you publish in from Visual Studio to an Azure website, that's the file that you use. And I'm going to get the one for the other site as well. And now if you look at my downloaded folders, I have those two published settings. And going to my extension, it's got a really basic UI. It's just a demo. But I can choose this Azure site. And I'll choose the other one. So this shows me the list of sites that it's replicating to. So here we are in the master site, and these are the satellite sites. And to give an example, and then going back to Monaco, since we have this editor, may as well use it. We'll say, OK, let's replicate this site. So first, I can run the master site itself to check that, in fact, I have made a change. Mm-hmm. But now let's go and run both the Europe and Asia sites. But we can see the Europe one having the exact same bits as the master site. So let's just make another quick change here to see if that causes the other one to revive itself.
I think one of the really cool things about this as well is just the pure speed of how quickly you have your change going through
exactly,
in the one website
exactly.
and the next one being updated. Yes.
And here we are, the other one. So they are both working now. There was a small bug there. So under the cover, this extension is using Web Deploy. So what it's doing, it's listening to file change notification on your .root folder such that anytime anything changes, in this case I use Monaco, but I could have done a Git deployment or anything else, say, oh, something changed here. Let's take that and web deploy it to all of the places that were selected here.
Cool. That's really cool. And that's actually a really good application of site extensions.
Exactly. Yes, yes. Awesome. I mean, it yet shows one more type of things. I mean, the great thing about site extension is when we first created the concept, you know, we had a few ideas in mind. But then people started coming and said, well, couldn't we make a site extension that does this and that and that?
Yeah.
And you know, in the end, there really are a lot of things you can do. Like once you have, you're running some code that has full read-write access to your site, and it's running under a secure endpoint, so you're not worried about random people damaging your site, it really opens up a lot of possibilities.
Oh, definitely. There's a scenario that I wanted to write, which was a service for converting HD access files to web config files.
Yes.
For all those PHP developers out there. And basically, it was really hard to do in the first place because if you run it as a service, you have all these people uploading their potentially sensitive HD access files, which has, you know, domains, write permissions, stuff like that, into a service where they have no idea who's managing it.
Yep.
Now I can go and make a site extension, drop that into my own website, know that the context is all of my own, and I don't have to worry about where that HD access file is because it's going into something that I know that I own and I'm the only one that can access.
Yep.
And that's brilliant. Cool. So this is a huge call to action for all our viewers out there. It's time to get innovative. And we'll get a whole bunch of people going out and creating these site extensions. And hopefully we'll have a way to share it
exactly.
If that prototype
exactly.
goes through.
Yes.
But for the time being, it's a great way to create some form of administration tool for your Azure website that you can, you know, if you're missing that one little feature, you can now add it yourself. And that's a powerful powerful thing.
Yes, I mean, I second that. I would encourage everyone to think of scenarios for site extension and just start writing stuff. And once we get a gallery later, we'll start having a pretty rich set of things.
Cool, awesome. Well, thank you for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it.
It's always a
pleasure. coming and talking to you. And what we're going to do is we're going to swap over to our Windows Azure website window. So thanks for joining us. Thanks for showing off the awesomeness that is site extensions.
And
we'll see you next time we are
thanks,
on the show.
Thanks, Corey.
Joining us today for the website window, Yohai.
Hey, Corey, how are you doing?
Not too bad. Welcome back. It's been a while since we had you on the show.
It's been a while, yes.
Yeah, we're going to have to clear your calendar more often to get you over here.
Probably, yeah. Feels good, though, to be back.
Yeah. So you're going to be showing us off a feature that people have been talking about. A lot of people love the affinity between clients and server and websites.
Yeah.
But a lot of people have actually wanted to have stateless applications and websites.
Correct.
And they really wanted to figure out, how do we actually go and do this?
Yes.
So that's what you're going to be showing us off.
Pretty much.
Cool.
Cool. So to begin with, maybe we'll take a quick look like how things works behind the scene a little bit for like 2-3 minutes just to understand how the system behaves, and then we can actually explain what goes on. So if we look at this is a very, very crude, I will say, illustration of the components that we have behind the scene in Windows Azure websites. And the big blue rectangular is basically the Azure Load Balancer. And whenever requests come to an Azure Load Balancer, let's say for a site, Azure Load Balancer says, hey, this goes into basically into Windows Azure website's endpoint. So it will go and hit what we call our front end, which is just another AIS box with an ARR.
Yeah.
There is some magic happening on the front end, and basically we are looking for your site. And if, for example, we don't find your site, or your site haven't been running for a while or anything like that, we basically go to database and ask, hey, where is the site, where can I run it, and so forth. And after a short negotiation, basically we find the web worker to which we run, we send a request, and from there we do the activation, and your site basically run on the box, communicate with the database for anything, storage, yada yada, and everything works well, and the response comes back. Let's say there is another request coming in for the same site, but your site has already been provisioned and running on a given worker. So for that case, we are not going to have all the whole negotiation. We're just going to push you to the right place. The front end and the client, basically the browser most time, they do this negotiation, and behind the scene there we embed a cookie, and we're going to see that cookie.
Yep.
And when that cookie is there, whenever you have the cookie, when we present the cookie, we're going to put you on the same worker all the time. So even if you have, let's say, like 2 instances or more, once you get the cookie, we will, you know, shortcut all the negotiation and just put you on that worker.
Yeah.
Now,
that's what they call sticky session.
That's what they call the kind of sticky session. Yes. And we did it for multiple reasons. A large number of our customers are running on one instance, let's say, whether it's free shared or even on a standard VM. So this is good for them, basically.
Yeah.
And if you're on multiple instances, some of the apps up there are using, you know, local disk or memory or stuff like that, and you want to basically end up on the same machine.
Yeah.
However, sometimes you do write a truly stateless app, and you want to get rid of that, basically, because if you have a stateless app and you're using this, you might get into a situation that there is imbalance or traffic is unbalanced well between your instances. So basically, if we get rid of the presentation, we look, I have a website here, just a regular website. It's a website I use to showing basically dynamic app configuration, sorry, and to just an MVC app, right? There's nothing here, I can refresh it, here's the site, and everybody happy. What I want to show basically is this site. If I look at the cookies, for example, it has a cookie. It has what we call an affinity, ARR affinity cookie.
Yep.
Cool. And if we look for a second at Fiddler, let's clean up and do a refresh. I'm going to show one thing. I want to show the headers for a second. And the header has nothing special. I mean, we got our servers and IIS and ISP, but there's nothing specific there. I'll change it in a second, and then we can see. So we added a small feature, a small config knob, basically, that tells you, hey, you know what? I don't want to have this ARR affinity cookie. And if you don't have that, every request you send to the front end, basically, we will look, hey, where do we need to put you? And if you have multiple instances, at that point, we will actually verify which of the machines is better to run, like less busy, let's say, like that, right? So we can throw on any of the machine, any instances that you have. Cool, so how does it work? Very simple. So I go to the site, I go to the dashboard, web config. We basically embed the thing in the web config. So this is, I presume people have, you've shown this in the past.
Yeah, David just showed off the Monica.
David just showed off the Monica, okay. So if I go to edit in Visual Studio, you get this nice fancy tab. I go to the web config here, and I already have set it before. I have, within the custom headers, I'm going to add up a head custom header, which is AR disable session affinity. Yep. And I'm going to basically set it to true. And I'm going to add another header, which will be our canary in the mine, basically. You will see that we'll see one header, we're not seeing the other, and so forth. You guys kind of believe me that things are actually happening.
Things are working.
Things are looking real, right. So we've made a change. Don't need to save anything. You can basically just go to your website. Let's get rid of the console for a second and do a refresh. You see this refresh takes a little bit longer time because it's a cold start. We touched the web config, but in a second it will come back. Pretty much came back, and it's there. So if we look at the cookies, you're probably going to see, hey, here's the cookie. The cookie is there because this is the same session. We haven't refreshed or anything like that. But if I'm going to delete the cookie now, and I'm going to try to head a refresh, if everything works, there is no other cookies. If you're really interested, we can talk about the other cookies over here. We also embed them, and it's well documented. But it's there. If you go for a second for a Fiddler, let's remove all again and hit the refresh button. So it came back, no cookie. Look at Fiddler. On the headers now, you'll see that, hey, here is Foobar,
yep,
which is the header we headed. However, you don't see the other header that we added, embedded, which is the error disabled cookie. The thing is that the worker is, we are embedding this for every request that comes back. On the front end, we basically take it away. But the foobar, which is a custom header that you might want to do for any other reasons, is still there. Therefore, it actually flows.
Cool.
So with that custom header, basically, you won't see any of the affinity cookie. You can try it at home. And as soon as I comment this out, both foo header will go away, but you'll see there are affinity cookie. And basically, it's that easy to enable truly stateless app on Windows Azure websites.
Cool. So if you were rolling out the next version of your app and you started with a stateful app,
yep,
and then you've been working away and you've made it into a stateless app, we add this in, it starts sending the header away, but we potentially have some sessions there that are still lingering around from people that were interacting with the previous version.
Yes.
We would actively want to go and take the approach of deleting that cookie on the client side.
So you can do that, obviously. You can delete the cookie on the client side through JavaScript or any other code, yeah, that you have. Basically, JavaScript will allow you to delete that session. You could, that's probably the only thing you can do.
In order to do that, because we're not sending that header back through, you would want to do something like this where you are sending a custom header back to kind of trigger and notify your application.
You could do that. Another dirty trick is you want to, if you're running on a standard VM, let's say small, you want to, let's say, move to a medium. Moving to a medium will basically take away whatever you're running on small and create a new VM for you, and you're going to run on medium.
Okay.
Now the error affinity cookie, the value, is different. So even if the session is already there, first you're going to get cold start, so just FYI.
Yeah.
But after that, any error cookies that have been sent before are not valid anymore, because we affinitize your site to a given machine.
Yeah.
So you can basically invalidate all of them. And then you can scale back after a couple of minutes if you don't want to spend the cost. It depends how where you're scaling from, basically.
Cool.
Or just wait a couple of days, and most likely all session will just die away.
Pop off.
Yes.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thanks for coming in and showing that.
Sure.
Hopefully all the developers out there that are building stateless applications on Windows Azure websites will appreciate this tip. And thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, man.
Really
good,
appreciate
it. Yes.
And thanks to all you for joining us here on WebCamps TV.